I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. In this episode, we're joined by Scott Z. Burns, whose fiery interrogation of American torture reports for duty. And just like magic, one of the strangest true tales of the year, the Amazing Jonathan documentary, pops into cinemas for a blink and you'll miss it event. I'm the Amazing Jake Cunningham podcast host. And this week, making her debut, is the Amazing Nicole Davies podcast guest. Hello, Nicole.
Hello, Jake.
And we also have the Amazing Kelly Powell podcast guest.
Hello.
And we have Sam Howlett.
Hello, thanks.
You're right. Yeah, enjoy that one. Nicole, it's lovely to have you with us. We're bringing Nicole over from the Best Girl Grip pod. Nicole, tell us a little bit about your show.
Yeah, so it's been going for almost a year now. I started it in January and I interview women behind the scenes of the British film industry. So they'll be doing jobs that you might not have heard of and you might not know what they're about, whether that's in distribution, marketing or on set, producers, demystifying what it is they actually do, with the hopes that the future generation can use it as a resource for how to get into the film industry.
And that is why we brought you on for this week, where we're talking about two films directed by men.
Exactly, no. Perfect.
I will say that you messaged me to say that you wanted to talk about the report.
I did.
And we look forward to talking about it in just a second. This one is about Daniel Jones, who's played by Adam Driver. He's tasked by Senator Dianne Feinstein, that's Annette Bening, with delivering a definitive report on the CIA's use of torture after 9/11. What he uncovers will shake America, but under constant threat from the US security forces, will their publication of the 6,500-page report actually bring change? Now, we should quickly get up to speed on the director, Scott Z. Burns, who is a name attached with a lot of big films, but people may not actually know him. One of those kind of people. This is his first feature film, second feature, did one for TV. But he's been on the Bourne films, Contagion, Side Effects, recently wrote The Laundromat, also attached to No Time to Die, the James Bond film that's out next year. Sam, what do we expect from a Z. Burns picture?
From a Z. Burns picture, we expect a lot of intricacy, a lot of details, lots and lots of heavy, dense dialogue, but delivered in a way that doesn't feel heavy or dense. A lot of sort of following loads of different characters, sort of unravelling of a conspiracy. He's very politically minded, I think, as well. His works deal with the world of politics a lot.
Mm.
He also produced An Inconvenient Truth, interestingly.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, he's very into conspiracy theories and politics and...
He's saying global warming's a conspiracy theory.
Obviously, yeah.
And I think it's interesting you talk about this kind of dense, wordy dialogue, because the director we most associate with is Steven Soderbergh. And if we look at The Laundromat, the most recent film that he released, so Scott Z. Burns is on the script there, but Soderbergh is like bringing Las Vegas to that one. That is party, 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 everywhere you look, colour, bouncing around, music, everything. And this is perhaps not what we're getting with this one, would you say, Nicole?
Not at all. It's funny that they're like sister films that are coming out at the same time, because it feels like Z. Burns channeled all his flamboyance into The Laundromat and then really like dialed it down for the report. So it's interesting that he can do both. I find him quite a hit and miss writer. Something.
What are the hits?
I really enjoyed Bourne Ultimatum. I think that's you know, a really strong franchise and it ends on a really, really strong note. I didn't like Contagion, didn't like Side Effects, but The Report and The Laundromat I did enjoy. And earlier we were just saying that maybe we didn't, but I quite like it as a piece of writing. Maybe it doesn't work as a piece of cinema, but in terms of disseminating lots of different topics, I think it works well.
Yeah, maybe the goal in this one is kind of de-shackling that Soderbergh identity, because Soderbergh is very much someone who
shows
puts himself
off.
In
I think showing and not showing off might be unfair, but he's someone that wants you to be very aware that you're watching a film. He sort of changes the colour of different scenes, the camera's all over the place, the editing's all over the place. He's very sure. I mean, he's not always like that, but often I think Soderbergh likes to experiment, whereas this film is very sober, very straight to the point, very much like his lead character, Dan Jones, very someone who's interested in the facts. Like, this is what happened. Here it is in chronological order with some flashbacks, but it's all about the details and all about the truth.
So it's a sober Berg.
Yes, it's a sober Berg.
Yep.
Nice.
Okay, and Sam, you spoke to the excellent Mr. Burns.
I did speak to the excellent Mr. Burns. We spoke about why this story was the one that became his first feature film. We spoke about his relationship with Steven Soderbergh, why he picked Adam Driver and Annette Bening for their roles. And if you want a little bit of a visual accompaniment to this interview, I'd say Scott Z. Burns looks like a sort of rather hench Stanley Tucci.
And on that image, here is Sam and Scott Z. Burns.
We're delighted to welcome Scott Z. Burns to the Curzon podcast. Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Congratulations on the film.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
So this is your first sort of theatrical big feature film as a director. Why has it taken you this long, do you think? And what was it about this story that made you think, you know what, I'm not going to hand this over to another director, I'm going to be the one to see this to the end and direct this myself?
When I first started, you know, in the movie business, I'd had sort of a previous career in advertising.
Right, okay.
And I was a director in advertising mm-hmm. and a writer. So when I started in Hollywood, I started off as a writer, and I had the amazing good fortune to find myself, you know, in collaboration with Steven Soderbergh on mm-hmm. a number of projects. And Steven is such an amazing director mm-hmm. that it was sort of a bit of an apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. So that was part of it. And not only that, but the nature of my collaboration with Steven was always such where I was really given a seat at the table that was, you know, was really engaged and involved. And that isn't always the case in Hollywood.
Sure.
A lot of times writers are just sort of cast away once they've provided the necessary pages. And a few years ago, Steven and I did a movie called Side Effects. And initially I was going to direct that.
Okay.
And I tried for many years to get funding and get a cast and and funding at the mm-hmm. same time. And eventually Steven said, you know, I really like that script and I want to do a thriller. Mm. And so I, you know, I think if you're any kind of storyteller, your obligation is first and foremost to the story. Mm. So if Steven Soderbergh says he's going to make your movie, you know, the appropriate answer is yes. But when we were making Side Effects, Steven said, you really need to find your own movie and, you know, write something for yourself. So when I started on The Report, I kind of felt that this would be that one. And when I finished the script and gave it to him, he said, you're the only person who's really going to understand sort of the math of this script. And, you know, you should do it yourself. So it seemed from fairly on that if this movie was going to ever get made, that I was going to be the person to direct it.
So what's the kind of timeline then of the real life events happening and you getting the idea to turn it into a screenplay? Because it's still a fairly recent event.
I think I really became interested in this story around 2013, or early 2014, maybe. The report itself came out in 2014, towards the end of the year. And so once the report came out, I, you know, started using it sort of as a source for my research. And that put me in contact with Dan. I called Senator Feinstein's office and said, may I speak to the lead investigator? And we had a number of preliminary phone calls where, you know, I would ask him questions about details in the report. And obviously, Dan can only divulge what is unclassified.
Sure, yeah.
So, you know, our conversations were limited to what was open source reporting and what was not classified. And then eventually Dan and I had a conversation about the story of him trying to tell the story and how arduous that was, and the intricacies of United States government procedure. And it became really interesting to me because it was suddenly more than about just the CIA's program. It was about the will of a person, and it was about, you know, what it means to continue to fight, and things that struck me as being inherently heroic and having a lot of integrity. And that was interesting to me. I think that times like these that are so bleak in terms of how we see our government and our leaders, to find the story of a guy who really had integrity and did his job and worked, you know, through the process, was inspiring to me.
Okay. And how much, when it came to like fully writing the screenplay and making the film, how much access were you given in the end to the kind of more of the top secret stuff?
None. I do not have any security clearance. So the only information that I have is open source reporting and the report itself. There were a lot of people besides Dan who I worked with in doing my research. You know, Jane Mayer wrote about this for The New Yorker, and in the States, she's a really revered journalist. You know, there was a guy named Alberto Mora who was a lawyer for the Navy during the program. Human rights workers who had done investigative work, and a couple of United States senators, Senator Mark Udall, who was featured in the movie, as is Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, were two senators who I spoke to about their experience of being on the committee and also their experience of Dan.
So another film that you've written that's recently come out is The Laundromat. And I think both The Report and The Laundromat, you know, they're both based on real events that are very kind of sort of complicated and dense, and there's a lot of material that isn't necessarily the most sort of audience friendly, if that makes sense. And both films have very different ways of kind of getting the audience into the film. Can you talk about, so for The Report then, the process of, there's so much material here, there was so much into this investigation, how do I get this on screen in a clear and accessible way?
Yeah, with The Report, you know, the thing that made it available to me as a movie was having a character, you know, and I thought that the ride that Dan Jones goes on is one that an audience would want to go on. And obviously when Adam Driver read the script and said he would do that, life got a lot easier for me. But so, you know, I think when you're doing a story like this, you need to experience it from the point of view of a character. Otherwise it does, you know, sort of become very challenging for an audience. But I think it becomes relatable. You know, he goes on a very Kafkaesque ride where, you know, there just is one obstacle after another that he has to figure out a way to go through or around. And that, as a storytelling kind of device, was something that I understood would work, you know, reasonably well. And then the report itself that Dan wrote sort of goes through the story of a number of detainees And so I tried to focus on three or four of them that I felt were representative of, you know, the overall program. Mm. So that was kind of the roadmap for that, because Dan Jones was a character that I felt was inherently heroic. Mm. It spoke to a certain kind of tone.
Sure.
When I got into the laundromat, it was a very different kind of tone, because the characters who we follow, the two principals of a firm in Panama named Mossack and Fonseca, who are also real people, you know, they were people who I don't think are inherently heroic, although I think they're complicated, and they're people who are created by the system that they work in. I don't think they invented the system. Mm-hmm. I think they're people who just profited from a system that basically exists to service the very, very wealthy. Mm. You know, when I actually interviewed both of them early on in the process, and I said, so how much money does it take to, you know, have, you know, to make an offshore corporation a worthwhile, you know, creation for you? And they said, you know, if you have $50 million, it's probably something you might want to consider. And just the casual way that they said that was really stunning to me, that, you know, we live in a world right now where there is such income inequality. Mm. And I felt like I wanted to make a movie about that. And, you know, I don't want the audience to have to go into the weeds. And so I feel like it's my job to go into the weeds and, you know, wrestle around and find a story and drag one out that they might find entertaining.
Yeah. So what was it about Adam Driver then that you felt, this is my dad, this is exactly who I need to sort of lead this film and to be the audience surrogate in a way?
Well, again, Steven Soderbergh was a big help with that. Steven had worked with Adam on a movie called Logan Lucky. And there's nothing about the character that Adam plays in Logan Lucky that would be suggestive of Dan Jones, actors are, you know, are more than any one role. And Steven said to me that, you know, first of all, I did know that Adam had been a Marine.
Yeah.
And I felt that was important because, you know, in the United States Marines, there's a lot of decorum and there's a chain of command, which is in a way like what a Senate staffer in the United States has to deal with. You know, these are sort of the unsung heroes and the helper bees and the people who graduate from college and want to become involved in governance. And they go and they're assigned to a senator and they do the research on which policy is made. And so I think Adam understood the everyman sort of worker person in the trenches, you know, notion of a Senate staffer. And it, you know, resonated with him the way that it would, you know, a Marine in the field. Mm. Also, Adam is so rigorous in his work. You know, he's not somebody who merely wants to say the lines. He needs to understand, you know, everything about why that piece of dialogue is written and what this scene is about. And there's a kind of depth to his work that is really reminiscent of the kind of work that Dan did. So, you know, nobody knows what Dan Jones looks like. Mm-hmm. In a sense, he's, you know, an everyman. Mm. And I think Adam has a kind of Jimmy Stewart quality, at least in this movie, of a guy who, you know, who you can relate to, who is just trying to do a good job, you know.
And then Annette Bening then as Dianne Feinstein, how did that come about? Was she always Dianne Feinstein for you?
She always was. That's one of those situations, much like, you know, when we did The Informant years ago, I always knew that it was going to be Matt Damon.
Yeah.
And, you know, I on that one, it was a little different because I had spoken to Matt before I even started writing. So I had his voice in my head. But in this case, I finished the script and I was able to get the script to Dianne or to Annette's agent. And he passed it on to her and we had lunch. And as it turned out, she had gone to university in San Francisco and had been aware of Dianne Feinstein, who was the mayor of San Francisco when Harvey Milk was killed and when Annette was in university there. And so there was, you know, an awareness of it. But, you know, Annette is an incredible student of American politics. And so she came to the role with just, you know, incredible insight into how politics works, and also the fact that, you know, the senator has a challenge. On one hand, you know, she wants to do the right thing. On the other hand, she's a politician, and if she goes to the extent that, you know, we need her to go to in the story, there's a risk for her.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the political thriller part of this comes from. And as an actress, you know, Annette is sort of unparalleled and really understood both the bones of the political structure, but also the dramatic structure of the script, which was really an incredible gift for me.
Yeah. And finally, I just wanted to ask you, do you see the film in a way as kind of a call for action?
Yeah, look, I hope, you know, and obviously as an American, when you watch the movie, I hope there's some sense of comfort that the system can work. And I think that should be universal. You know, there are obviously great political challenges going on in the UK as well. And so I hope when you see someone with the integrity of Dan Jones, there's some comfort and hope. But I also hope that there's no complacency, and that, you know, we do insist that our leaders provide accountability. I think when accountability stops happening, when transparency stops happening, then we see the problems that we have right now. And the real risk of that is cynicism, and that especially with young people, they look at it and they say, you know, well, obviously it's rigged and everybody's lying, and that turns people off. Mm-hmm. And I hope when people see the film, it pisses them off enough to want to do something.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, thank you so much, Scott. So if people have seen the trailer for this, it certainly has a feeling of films like Spotlight, The Post, All the President's Men. Is that fair to say?
I think yes, in the case of Spotlight, but The Post is a much glossier film. I think if you were to consider that to be like an exhibition match, then this is more of like a bare-knuckled boxing underground match. It's much more pared back, is grittier, it feels a bit dirtier and more rigorous, whereas The Post feels like it's really going for gold.
Mm. It's a scrappier film, as you say, it's a dirtier one. And I think that's because actually even with By the Grace of God, a film that we recently spoke about, the actual kind of travesties that are at the centre of it that are being uncovered and revealed aren't necessarily seen, but the report doesn't shy away from the torture that the report is about.
Both in the report itself and what it's uncovering, I think you see the torture in what the hours that Dan Jones, Adam Driver's character, spends in that underground basement, kind of compiling all the documents and going through them. Like, that in itself is torture. But then it doesn't, yeah, it's not unsanitized, kind of the stuff that it does show when it goes back to kind of Afghanistan and Iraq and where all these atrocities are happening.
And it's also interesting that, like, another film would have been like the culmination of the movie would be what they found in the report. Yet here is, you know, throughout what he's uncovering, and you kind of are step by step along with him in the uncovering of what has happened. But it's interesting that a whole another part of this film is the backlash that he and sort of the Senate committee got from the CIA themselves on you know, on this massive report that was crucial.
I think with the film being as wordy as it is, as you say, Sam, something that I think Zed Burns as a writer is really focused on in structure as a way to keep the energy up and to keep audiences engaged with it, because maybe if you did play this out as it happened, you're kind of just going to get lulled into some kind of hypnosis with just the reading and doing of paperwork.
Yeah, I think the thing with comparing it to like The Post, as you say, The Post is very, The Post is very much like, look at all these lively characters, look at how fun or kind of exuberant the 70s newspaper scene was, whereas this is very much like, it's very cold, it's very much, this is sort of one man who's been, has a job to do, and he's very good at that job, and he's doing this job for the right reasons, and he gets straight to the point. And I think the first sort of 10-15 minutes are very much like, this happened then, skip forward a year, this happened then, skip forward a year. And then I think it takes time to kind of be like, to sit you down in the kind of the main bulk of what's going on with these other flashbacks to give you more context. But it does have a real pace to it.
And Burns, like, he says that this is a story about heroism.
Yeah, he said that...
this is the real theme park.
He said, yeah, in the interview that you've just heard, he says about... he wanted to tell a story about this kind of real hero, about someone... and I think, again, this is another way that it nicely compares to All the President's Men and The Post and By the Grace of God, in a way that you've got people that are just very good at their jobs and who are really so focused on doing the right thing. They're not like, they're not saving the world in the way we expect heroes in film to do. This is very much, this is how, with the tools at his hand in the real world, this is how heroes work. And I think he's really sort of in awe of Dan Jones, the real life figure.
Well, let's talk about the man playing Dan Jones, because you mentioned that you speak in the interview about why Adam Driver. I mean, really, if someone says, how about Adam Driver, you would say...
yes, of course.
This is the second in our winter, what is now quadrilogy of Adam Driver films. We've had Marriage Story, we've got The Report, we'll have Star Wars, and just announced we're going to have Don Quixote finally in January as well. What are we getting from this Driver that maybe we don't get from the other Drivers, Nicole?
I think we're getting something quite similar, but just channeled or refracted through a different light. So if you think about what we associate with Adam Driver, it's quirky, it's intense. And I think this character is both of those things. Like, if you think about the fact that Dan Jones had to commit himself to 6-7 years doing this task without ever knowing if what he was working towards was going to see the light, that takes quite a lot of commitment. Not a lot of people would commit themselves to that. So you need someone that is quite unusual in that respect. And I think, although, you know, he's got the suit and the shorter haircut, I think Driver channels that sort of intensity, particularly later in the film when he's then fighting to want to get it published. You kind of see that real, that force of nature come through. He's not, you know, he's not quiet, he's not dour, he's actually very charismatic. I think that's true of Dan Jones himself. There was a interview in the Times, and he was described as like wry and articulate and actually very funny, and I think you get all those kind of traits with Driver as well.
I just think this, of those four, for me this is the least showy of those performances. You know, in Marriage Story he's very lively, he has a musical number,
there's some capital A
he's flexing.
Yeah,
there's,
he's acting
with a capital A. And then obviously Star Wars, he's a very wide range in his performance in Star Wars, and I'm sure he has the same in the Terry Gilliam film. And here it's the only performance that is a real person. He's far more grounded than I think I've seen Adam Driver before, but I think that works for the character, someone who's so focused on this one mission. And even though, as we've said, this is a very dense film, he's got to convey a lot of information and a lot of just pure details in his dialogue, he's such a compelling actor that you're more than happy to sit there and watch him and listen to him spew all this data to you.
And part of the joy is being able to see him spar against other people as well.
Yeah.
Like there's a great Annette Bening in this one.
She's really, really good in this. And their scenes in particular are some of the best in the film, because you can. It's with her as sort of a sounding board that his passion comes out, and those are the scenes that grip you as a viewer, I think.
Yeah, and it's a great supporting cast here. We've got Corey Stoll, John Hamm.
Yeah. Michael C. Hall.
Yeah, and...
Ted Levine.
Matthew Rhys reprising his role
from The Post. The same character.
It is not the same character, but similar role. He does it well, though.
Does it very well, yeah.
Matthew Rhys loves starting conspiracies. all right, and that is The Report, which is in cinemas and is going to be available on demand very soon as well. But we must move on to our second film, which is The Amazing Jonathan documentary. And this one is about The Amazing Jonathan, who I was not aware of, a guy called John Edward Zelis, who built a career as a magician, kind of shock and deception in the 80s. He's diagnosed with a terminal heart condition, given 1 year to live. He's made to retire his act. This is a few years ago. But we cut to 3 years later. He's not dead. Everyone's amazed. And documentarian Ben Berman films perhaps The Illusionist's greatest trick, an epic comeback tour that careers off the rails in extremely entertaining and unexpected ways. Now, I first heard about this film when a couple of months ago it was announced that Louis Theroux was going to be hosting the live satellite event premiere of it into cinemas. And I thought, I want to know about that, because Louis Theroux was going to attach himself to something maybe that's a bit quirky and a bit strange and a bit self-reflexive maybe. And I was so pleased because I really think this is like maybe my favourite documentary of the year. I think this is absolutely brilliant. Tough one to talk about on the podcast because so much of the joy of it comes from the reviews.
Watching it. Yeah.
So we won't go too much. But how do we feel about this one around the table?
Yeah, really good. Really good one.
Yeah, absolutely. I watched it knowing very little. And as you say, it's interesting that the initial idea for this documentary was just to look at a magician's comeback, which does not interest me in the slightest. And the resulting film is way beyond that, without giving anything away. And I was just as sort of shocked and surprised and enthralled by it as any other sort of twisty, turny mystery film.
Mm. But I think that's because it's not it is about a magician's comeback, but it's also about the comeback story in general and what that is and what that means. Almost like Lisa Kudrow's The Comeback.
Mm.
Similarities there.
Yeah. As I mentioned in the synopsis, I've never heard of this guy at all until this documentary came about. And the first 20 minutes or so is kind of just setting that up. It's giving us this truncated history of this magician. And that is the documentary that Ben Berman set out to make, was this profile of this comeback. And you can clearly see that he's talented. He's got a dark sense of humor, and maybe that's where the laughs are going to come from on this journey. But I think Louis Theroux is maybe attached here in that host capacity because of the parallels that could be drawn to my Scientology movie that he made a few years back, in that it enters this world of self-reflection about filmmaking and documentary and truth on camera and just how valuable or truthful any of those things can actually be.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting to see that this is his sort of, it's his first film, I think.
Berman's prior to this is like sketch comedy stuff. Tim and Eric, Workaholics, Comedy Bang Bang,
that's where
he's attached to.
Exactly, yeah. So it's interesting that he chose to make a documentary, and the way that he plays with those conventions is very interesting. And he very much inserts himself into this film as a character. It goes on a completely different path than the one that you're thinking it's going to go on.
Well, the film becomes more and more about Berman's struggle to make the film and how he can approach a guy who, right down to his career and everything surrounding that, is all about deception.
Mm.
How do you like ethically approach that? You know, like what are the questions you can ask? How do you, what can... If you can't trust him, how do you deal with that kind of thing?
And you see his he tries to approach with rationality to a situation that is just becoming more and more absurd, to the point where the film actually reveals a point where he's considering smoking meth on camera because of the weird narrative that he and Jonathan have twisted themselves into. And along the way, there is just kind of shock after shock, not in a gruesome way or anything like that, but you cannot expect it to go in the places that it does. It's this amazing Russian doll of storytelling.
Talking heads are also funny.
Yeah, because people pop up, like Eric Andre pops up.
Yeah, they interact with him in weird ways as well. It's just like, wait, when did you, what?
And I can see people that enjoyed Tickled, the doc from a few years ago, really enjoying this one. And I think this would be a great one to see with a crowd, because it would be this great feeling, kind of like shock and comedy emanating from it, because I wasn't lucky enough to see it like that, and I think I might have to go back and do it like that, because it's such a fun, bewildering film I'm really excited about people seeing. Perhaps Three Identical Strangers might be one.
Kind of like investigative documentaries that have lots of surprises in store.
All right.
Also just a playful acknowledgement of the process. I think a lot of people think that documentaries like film are in the can, but they're not, and the stories aren't unraveling at the same time as shooting happens. And I think it benefits documentary to acknowledge that from the start.
Yeah. And really, this film took a long time to make. Like, we go over a long stretch of a few years over the course of this one. But talking about great documentaries, Sam, what's happening on Curzon Home Cinema?
So you can watch The Amazing Jonathan on Curzon Home Cinema from Friday the 22nd of November. Before then, you can catch up with Diego Maradona. So that's Asif Kapadia's film about perhaps one of the greatest footballers of all time and his tumultuous career, specifically looking at his time in Napoli. And if you venture back a few months ago when the film came out, we had Asif Kapadia on the podcast.
And I forgot to mention that Louis Theroux Q&A for the Amazing Jonathan documentary, that's happening on the 19th, if you want to check that one out. Talking of Q&As, Kelly, up on the event schedule, we got a couple more new additions that are pretty exciting.
Yeah, we do. There's a Q&A with Josh O'Connor for Only You at Curzon Bloomsbury on Thursday the 21st. So head to curzoncinemas.com/events to get your tickets there. Yeah.
That's the only thing that Josh O'Connor's in at the moment that anyone's talking about.
He's in The Crown.
What? all right. Yeah, so do go and check that one out. And if you haven't seen Only You, a great opportunity to check it out ahead of a couple of BIFFA nominations that it's just received as well. But if you've got any thoughts on the report or the Amazing Jonathan documentary, you can let us know by tweeting us at Curzon Cinemas or all of us directly. I'm there as Jake H. Cunningham. Sam, you are there as...
at SamHowlett_1.
And Kelly?
KS_Powell.
And Nicole, where can people find you and a bit more about Best Girl Grip?
They can find me at Stone Cold Fox. That's Stone with an E, Cold with an E, and Fox with an X. And Best Girl Grip, yeah. Funnily that you should mention Only You. I've got an interview from a while back with the writer-director of that film, Harry Wootliff. Also, lots of BIFFA-nominated talent on there. Producer Emma Duffy, who did Mari. But currently happening at the moment are all the podcast episodes I recorded at the Toronto International Film Festival. So filmmakers, but also head of development at the games company Ubisoft.
Yeah, actually, because we've done a few interviews with programmers on this show, and I've forgotten it. It's like Dolotto?
Dorota Lek, who did Discovery program, so first-time filmmakers at TIFF, and coming up is the Shorts programmer, who is also an academic, and she's done lots of stuff about horror, zombie, and East Asian cinema. Check that out.
Absolutely.
I've just got the name Best Girl Grip, by the way. Just clicked in my head.
You just got it.
Yeah.
It's really clever.
Very funny.
And it's on iTunes, Spotify, and Acast.
As are we. So do subscribe if you've enjoyed the show. But that's about it. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods
for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.